hesitated. Three? Correct. Miss Hayworth turned to the next girl going down the line. When my turn came, I answered promptly and perfectly, earning a puzzled look from Miss Hayworth, seeing as the question had been about the dance I just botched. She walked past me. Mira, at what round is the twirl performed on the Allegro circuit? I saw Mira's face go blank. She had a natural instinct for the movements, and did well in the actual steps, but these quizzes stumped her. Mira always worked so much harder than the rest of us, having to catch up on things many of us already knew, as Ausfridians, particularly with the language. She spent so much time working on her speech that technical dance facts just weren't a priority. Miss Hayworth's back was to me, and I caught Mira's eye with a small gesture, holding up four fingers. The fourth, Miss Hayworth? Although her accent was still noticeable, Mira's dedication to improving her Ausfridian was already apparent. Correct. Miss Hayworth moved on, and Mira gave me a nod of thanks. I nodded back, happy to have helped. The lesson closed with us drilling repetitive steps on a new dance. Naturally, I pretended to fumble through it. I saw what you did, Clara hissed, sidling up beside me while Miss Hayworth's attention was elsewhere. You gave her the answer. You do it all the time. As soon as I get proof, I'm going to bust you and that Sir Minikin slut. Don't call her that, I snapped. Triumph flared in Clara's face. I'd become pretty good at ignoring her jabs, and it had been a while since she'd gotten a rise out of me. Someone as nasty as her lived for that kind of thing. Why not? She asked. It's true, you know. I'm not just making it up. Of course you are, I said. Mira's one of the most decent girls here, which you'd know if you weren't such a bigot. Clara shook her head. How do you think she got here? How in the world do you think a Sir Minikin refugee managed to snag a spot in an establishment like this? One whose whole point is to train elite Ausfridian girls. Cedric Thorne saw potential in her. Clara smirked. Oh, he's seen a lot more of her than that. I didn't have to fake my next stumble. You're such a liar. I should report you for slander. Am I? Did you see the way he dotes on her when he visits? The way he defied his father to get her and risk his commission? They made a deal. She went to bed with him in exchange for a spot here. I've heard other people talking about it. Who? I asked. Your toady friends? Say whatever you want, but there's no getting around the truth. Your Sir Minikin friend is a dirty, shameless... I did what I did next without a second thought. Clara had moved close to me in order to keep her voice down, and I used that proximity to snake my foot out and strike her in the ankle. The results were spectacular, throwing both of us off balance. Mishaps weren't uncommon for me, but she was one of the better dancers. I was thrown off by my move, falling backward and striking a bureau rather painfully. It was worth it to see Clara go sprawling on the floor, causing the whole class to come to a standstill. "Girls!" exclaimed Miss Hayworth. "What is the meaning of this?" I straightened up, smoothing my dress from where it had snagged on the bureau's elaborate handles. "I'm sorry, Miss Hayworth. It was my fault. My clumsiness." She looked understandably exasperated. "How can you understand the principles so well and not execute them? And, oh, look, you've torn your dress. We'll both get in trouble with Mistress Masterson for that." I looked down and woefully saw that she was right. These dresses might not be the silks and velvets I'd once worn, but they were a substantial investment by the glittering court. Respect for them had been drilled into us. Clara's embarrassment might have come at a greater cost than I'd expected. "Well," said Miss Hayworth, leaning close, "it looks like it should be an easy enough fix, thankfully. You may go early to take care of it." I stared up at her in confusion. "Take care of it?" "Yes, yes. It's a quick mend. Go now, and you probably won't be late for Mr. Bricker's lesson." I didn't move right away as I let the impact of her words sink into me. "A quick mend," I repeated. Annoyance filled her features. "Yes, now go!" Spurred by her command, I hurried out of the classroom, taking only small satisfaction from Clara's outrage. When I was alone in the great hall, I surveyed my skirt's tear and felt despair sink in. For anyone else, this probably was an easy mend, unless you'd never mended anything. I'd occasionally done fancy, very fine needlework, and if she'd wanted me to embroider flowers on the dress, I could have managed that. I had no idea how to mend something like this, but dutifully borrowed one of the manor's sewing kits and went to my room. There I found a housemaid cleaning. I retreated, not wanting her to see my ineptitude, and instead chose to work in the conservatory. It was unoccupied. The music teacher wouldn't be here for 2 days. I unlaced my overdress and settled down on a small sofa. I wriggled out of the voluminous garment and spread the fabric over my knees. It was a light rose-colored wool, suitable for our late spring weather. It was thicker than the fine silks I'd embroidered, so I randomly chose a larger needle and set to work. My maids had always threaded my embroidery needles for me, so that alone took time. And once I started sewing, I knew it was hopeless. I didn't know how to seamlessly mend the tear. My stitches were uneven and badly spaced, creating obvious puckers in the fabric. I paused and stared at it morosely. My regular excuse about being a lady's maid wouldn't get me out of this. Maybe I could make up a story about how my abysmal sewing skills had gotten me dismissed. The sound of the conservatory door opening broke my rumination. I feared someone had come to check on me. But to my astonishment, it was Cedric who entered. Remembering I was in my chemise, I promptly exclaimed, "Get out!" Startled, he jumped back and nearly obeyed me. Then curiosity must have won him over.
"Wait. Adelaide.
What are you doing?
Are you...
half-naked?" I draped the overdress over me. "Yes! Yes, I am!" He shut the door, looking more curious than scandalized. "Actually, I was going to ask, are you sewing? Like, with a needle and everything?" I sighed, irritation overcoming my embarrassment. I wondered what he was even doing here. He'd stopped by the manor only once since my initial arrival. "Can you please go before this situation gets any worse?" He moved closer, daring a hesitant look at the dress I was clutching to me. The torn part of the skirt hung near my knee, and he knelt down to get a better look. "You are sewing. Or, well, something sort of like sewing." The dry remark was enough for me to ignore his being so close to my leg. I snatched the torn skirt away from him. "Like you could do any better." He straightened up and sat on the couch beside me. "I could, actually. Let me see it." I hesitated, unsure of giving up my coverage or revealing my ineptitude, and then finally handed the dress over. The chemise I'd worn under it was deep blue, but still thinner than modesty allowed. I crossed my arms over my chest, angling myself away as best I could, while still managing to look over and observe him. "This is a quilting needle," he said, pulling out my stitches. "You're lucky you didn't tear holes in this." He replaced the needle with a smaller one and threaded it in a fraction of the time it had taken me. He then folded over the torn fabric and began sewing with neat, even stitches.
"Where did you learn to do that?" I asked reluctantly. "There are no doting maids at the university. We've got to learn to make our own repairs."
"Why aren't you there today?" He paused and glanced up, carefully keeping his eyes trained above my neck. "No classes. Father sent me out to get status reports from here and Dunford Manor." "Well, I'm sure you'll have a lot to say about my progress." His response was a smile as he returned to his work. His hair was casually unbound today, framing his face in soft auburn waves. "I'm afraid to ask how this happened. Defending Mira's honour once again?" As I spoke, I realized with a pang what the accusation had been, and his role in it. I had to avert my eyes briefly before turning back to him. Clara was being typically mean. This caused another pause as he looked up with a frown. "Are they still harassing her?" "Less than they used to, but it's still going on. She handles it well, though." "I'm sure she does," he said. "She's got a strong spirit. Not easily broken." A strange feeling settled in the pit of my stomach as he returned to his work. There'd been no missing the regard in his voice. A warmth, even. My stomach sank further when he added, "I hope you'll keep helping her. I'll worry a lot less if I know she's got a strong defender. Only a fool would cross you. I certainly wouldn't." I couldn't take in the compliment.
A terrible thought had seized hold of me. Had Clara been right? Had Mira gotten here by sleeping with Cedric? He certainly treated her with more than the indifference one might have toward an acquisition. He admired her, and was concerned for her. And Clara was right that bringing her here had been a risk for him. I didn't want to believe such things about quiet, resilient Mira, who had such pride and strength in her every action. And I definitely didn't want to believe it of Cedric. Studying his profile now, the fine cheekbones and gently curved lips, I felt the unease spread from my stomach, tightening my chest. In my mind's eye I had a sudden flash of those lips on my friend, of those deft fingers running through her luxurious hair. I swallowed, trying to push down the inexplicable dismay I felt. He looked up again, his expression softening as he took in my face. "Hey, it's going to be all right. This is almost done. No one will know." I must have been wearing my emotions, and he'd misunderstood. I lowered my gaze, murmuring a stiff thanks, as opposed to one of the usual biting remarks we so often traded. "There we are," he said a few minutes later, holding up the overdress. "As good as new." Looking at it, I saw that he was correct. The stitches were barely visible, unless you were right next to it. It would hopefully be enough to evade Mistress Masterson's notice. I took the dress, turning away from him as I pulled it over my head. I was surprised that in so short a time it had picked up the fleeting scent of the vetiver he wore. It took me a few minutes to get the ensemble back together, fastening all the tiny pearl buttons on the bodice and smoothing the petticoat to lie flat. Then, of course, came the tedious process of arranging the contrasting chemise so it peaked out properly. When I finally turned around, Cedric was regarding me with amusement. "Were you watching me get dressed?" I exclaimed. "Don't worry, I didn't see a thing," he said. "Except how much progress you've made in putting on your own clothes. I guess this finishing school is really paying off." "Someone should send you to a finishing school," I retorted as we moved toward the door. "You have no sense of decency," says the girl who let me come in. "I told you to leave. You were the one who ignored me and marched right in anyway, despite the state I was in." That easy, confident grin returned. "Don't worry. It's easily forgotten." "Well," I said huffily, "it shouldn't be that easily forgotten." "Would you like it better if I say I'll eventually forget it, but not without a great deal of struggle and torment?"
"Yes."
"Done."
We parted, and I made my way toward the drawing-room where Mr. Bricker gave us lessons about both history and current affairs. The door was ajar, and I lingered outside, reluctant to enter. I didn't want to be called out for being late. I also didn't really want to listen to his lecture. He was explaining the Alanzan heresy, and its growing concern to the Osfridian Church. All good Eurosphering people knew that 6 glorious angels had served the gods since the beginning of creation, and that 6 wayward angels had fallen and become demons. The Alanzans worshipped all 12 angels, dark and light alike, putting them on nearly the same level as the great god in bloodthirsty, sordid rituals. I knew much of this, as it was a hot topic in noble drawing rooms, one to be marvelled at, and then dismissed, as something other people did. I started to push the door open, but stopped when I caught sight of Mira, listening avidly, her eyes focused on Mr. Bricker. Alanzans were a big faction in Cyrminica. But instead of pondering if she'd encountered them, I found myself admiring her beautiful profile. The features that marked her as other also made her exotic. Almost sensual, I thought, in a way the rest of us could never be. Was that quiet, regal demeanor holding a dark secret? Had she been Cedric's mistress? That ugly feeling started to rise up within me again, and I banished it as I pushed open the door and stepped inside. I took my seat, hoping the scent of vetiver would soon fade from my dress. Chapter 6. I saw little of Cedric in the months that followed. With so many other things to keep me busy, it was easy to push him off to a place in the back of my mind. I filed other things there, like the memories of my parents, and how worried my grandmother must be, and made a point of visiting that mental place as little as possible. It was only on occasional late nights, when I'd lie restless in bed, that I'd allow myself a peek at those dark corners of my mind.
My tenure at the Glittering Court soon became the happiest time of my life to date, excepting when my parents were alive. Despite the regimented schedule, the endless drills and classes, I felt a freedom I'd never known. I moved around the manor with a lightness in my chest, heady with the feeling that I could do anything, and had the world at my fingertips. Certainly I was scrutinized, but nowhere near the levels of Osfro. That wasn't to say I didn't still face some challenges. Hey, are you ready to... What have you done? I looked up as Tamsin and Mira entered the kitchen. Even though we'd now spent nearly 8 months learning the ways of upper-class ladies, Mistress Masterson wanted us, or some of us, to remember our humble roots. That meant occasional household chores, such as the dishes I was currently washing. They hurried over to my side, peering at the copper kettle I was attempting to wash. Is that bleach? That is bleach! I can smell it! Without waiting for a response, Tamsin grabbed the kettle and dumped its contents into a tub of wastewater. What were you thinking? Something got burned in it, and scrubbing wasn't working. I saw you use bleach to get out that stain from your dress the other day, so I thought... Stop, said Tamsin. I don't want to hear any more. I can't hear any more. Mira picked up a cloth and rubbed the inside of the pot. It came out, and the bleach wasn't in long enough to cause damage. I felt triumphant. So it did work. Soaking in water followed by a lemon scrub would have done the same with a lot less risk. Tamsin took one of my hands and held it up. One side was red from the bleach. Deep as hell! Go rinse them off, you've got the best hands of all of us, don't ruin that! Tamsin's own hands showed the signs of having scrubbed laundry since childhood, and it vexed her to no end. She was constantly applying moisturizers in an effort to undo, or at least minimize, the damage. Mira took my apron and hung it up while Tamsin gave me a quick inspection. No other harm done. The dress is intact, and I dare say that's the nicest chignon I've ever seen you do. Did someone help you? I patted my hair, affronted at her suspicious tone. We share the same room. Do you think someone sneaked in and helped me? It wasn't me, said Mira, seeing Tamsin's gaze fall on her. Adelaide's come quite a long way. I saw her fold a blanket the other day, and there were almost no creases in it. I pushed the kitchen door open, and the other two followed me. Oh, stop, both of you. It's our off day. It wouldn't matter if I did have sloppy hair. Tamsin narrowed her eyes and thought. No. Something's going on. Mistress Masterson wouldn't have ordered us to the ballroom otherwise. This is usually the day she has it cleaned. My slowness on the dishes had made us the last to arrive, but we weren't late yet. Even if we were, I didn't think Mistress Masterson would have noticed. She was busy directing one of the house servants to set up large tables on the far side of the room. In the middle of the ballroom itself, we were met with the astonishing sight of blankets spread across the floor, and our housemates sitting on them. "What's going on?" I asked Rosamond. She glanced up at us from her blue-flowered quilt. "No idea. Mistress Masterson just told us to sit down and wait." Puzzled, my friends and I made it across the room to an unoccupied blanket, an enormous fuzzy one with red and yellow stripes. Around us, the other girls' conversation buzzed as they too wondered what was happening. Tamsin groaned. "Damn it. I knew I should have worn my church dress." "You think we're having a service in here?" I asked. "No, but I think this is a test. A pop quiz. Maybe how to entertain and throw a get-together on short notice?" Tamsin pointed to the entrance. "Look. Here comes food." Three men in plain workman's clothes entered, hauling large platters that Mistress Masterson directed to the tables. As she uncovered them, I could tell, even from this distance, that they contained finger sandwiches and fruit. The workman left and returned with a second load of food, as well as plates and linen napkins. I'd thought Tamsin was paranoid, but there was no doubt we had much more food than our coterie needed. After the tables were filled, the workman left and didn't return. Mistress Masterson stood by the doorway, an expectant look on her face. "Damn it," Tamsin repeated. She took a deep breath. Her eyes grew as steely as those of a general preparing for battle. "Okay. No problem. We can do this. We can do this better than the others, because none of them have realized what's happening. We've got an edge. Think back to our lessons on greeting strangers at a party. All the acceptable topics. Weather, upcoming holidays. Animals are all right too. No religion, no politics. Unless it's in support of the king and his latest policy. Always look dignified. Who knows what kind of posh guests the old lady's dug up. Keep your posture good, and... That crafty countenance dissolved into disbelief, and Tamsin let out a very undignified shriek. In a flash she was on her feet, sprinting across the room. And she wasn't the only girl. Others were on the move as well, and the buzz turned into an outright cacophony of chaos and excitement. Turning my gaze back to the entryway, I saw strangers entering. Strangers who could hardly be called posh. My housemates lost themselves in the crowd, swept away in a flood of hugs and tears. "They're families," said Mira softly. She and I were the only two still sitting down. A smile spread over her face as we watched Tamsin throw herself against the chest of a big, burly man with a red beard. A thinner woman stood smiling beside him, and three red-haired children hovered nearby. Two, a girl and a boy, looked to be in their mid-teens. The third was a young girl, only a few years old. Tamsin swept her into her arms as though she weighed nothing, and then tried to simultaneously draw the other two into a hug, resulting in laughs and confusion. There was no guile on Tamsin's face, no cunningness or sizing up the situation. The tight control she always maintained was gone, her emotions pure and raw. There was a lightness about her that made me realize that, until that moment, I'd never truly comprehended just how much weight she carried. "Do you have anyone coming?" I asked Mira. She shook her head. "No. No other family came with me from Siminica. But I do wonder what my parents would think of all this if they could see it. They'd be shocked." I couldn't help a laugh, even though I didn't feel very cheerful. "Mine too. Mine too." But surprisingly, it wasn't the thought of my parents that made my heart ache just then. It was Grandmama. She'd taken care of me these last few years, working so hard to salvage our situation. I still stood by my decision to leave, but as the initial excitement had faded, I'd had more time to consider the consequences of what I'd done, and feel guilty. Cedric had covertly slipped me a clipping from the society papers mentioning Lionel's marriage to some minor noble only a few weeks after my disappearance. Cedric had scrawled on it, "Such a hasty marriage, probably the only way the poor man could console himself after such a great loss." That had closed the door on that chapter, but still left a lot of other questions unanswered. I spoke without thinking. "I wish I could see my grandmother." Mira regarded me with mild surprise. "You've never mentioned her before."
"I don't believe it. They're here."
She slowly got to her feet, her eyes widening as she stared across the room to a wizened Siminican couple.
"Pablo and Fernanda. They came with me on the journey from home. Excuse me."
She walked away without looking back, and although I was glad to see her hug the little old man and woman, the ache in my heart only intensified. Most of the other girls were too overwhelmed with their own loved ones to notice much else, but a few cast curious glances my way. I'd worried about standing out in other ways, but never this one. Even those without blood relatives at least had friends visiting. I was the only one alone. The only one without any family. The only one without a past. Or maybe not.
"Adelaide's over there, behind Sylvia's family," I heard Mistress Masterson say, "sitting on the striped blanket."
A woman stepped around a crowd of people, beaming when she saw me.
"There's my Adelaide!"
I stared. I'd never seen her before in my life. She looked to be twice my age and had a voluptuous figure that was enhanced, more than it should be, by a faded red dress that was one size too small. Generous coal lined her eyes, and a straw hat with fake flowers sat atop brassy hair.
"Well," she asked, standing over me with hands on her hips, "aren't you going to give your Aunt Sally a hug?"
Beyond her, I saw Mistress Masterson watching curiously. Not wanting to draw extra scrutiny, I stood up and embraced the strange woman, and was flooded with the cloying scent of tea roses.
"Just play along," she whispered in my ear.
We stepped apart, and I forced a smile that I hoped hid how bewildered I was. Mistress Masterson nodded approvingly and then moved on.
Aunt Sally relaxed, but still kept her voice low as she spoke to me.
My name is Rhonda Gables, great star of some of the biggest theatrical productions in Osfro. You've probably heard of me.
I shook my head.
Well, a girl of your station probably doesn't make it out to the theatre very much, so that's understandable.
My family owned box seats and had seen every major show in the capital, and I felt certain that if Rhonda had been in any of them, I'd remember.
"What are you doing here?" I asked.
She peered around conspiratorially.
"I'm here to play your aunt. I was hired by... well, I never got his name, but he paid in silver. Nice-looking young man. Brown hair, good cheekbones. Why, if I was 20 years younger, I'd have liked to..."
"Yes," I interrupted. "I think I know the young man in question. Do you know why you're here?"
"Just that I was supposed to come out here to Euros knows where in the moors with the rest of this lot. Kara just picked us up in the city and told us we'd be fed, and who am I to turn down a free meal? There's the man that organized it."
She pointed across the room as Jasper entered.
"Do you know if they're serving wine here?"
Jasper clapped his hands for attention, and the din died down as we stepped closer to hear him. He was in full showman mode.
"First, let me welcome you here today to Blue Spring Manor. You are our guests, and we are all at your service. Second, I want to thank you for the sacrifice I know you must have made in the last 8 months by lending us your daughters."
He paused to make eye contact with random people nodding and smiling.
"But it has been our privilege and our honor to have them, to help them develop the potential you surely know they had all along. Today you'll get a glimpse into the world they've entered, a world that will be dwarfed by the riches and splendor they'll get when they marry in Adoria."
That last bit hit home. Nearly all of the visitors were in awe of the ballroom, with its crystal chandelier and gilded wallpaper. The idea that more wealth than this might be waiting was simply incomprehensible.
"Normally we invite friends and family later in the spring, so that we can picnic in warmer conditions."
Jasper smiled conspiratorially, nodding toward a large window covered in ice crystals.
"But as you can see, that's not possible today. So we'll have an indoor picnic. Fill your plates and cups, find a spot, and learn just how much your daughter's futures truly glitter."
I tried not to roll my eyes. It was hard for me to take his fine words seriously, recalling how harshly he'd spoken to Cedric in private. But everyone else was quite charmed. Families clustered together and made their way over to the buffet. Rhonda had noticed there was rum punch and had already shot over to that section of tables. I hurried after her, delayed by loved ones strolling and taking their time to catch up. As I waited for Caroline's grandmother to teeter past, I overheard Jasper speaking to Mistress Masterson. "It's always such a delicate balance, this meet and greet," he said to her quietly. "You never know if some of them might get homesick and bolt. But once the Adoria trip is official, I find the risk of running is actually greater than. If they've been bolstered up by their dazzled loved ones beforehand, they're more likely to want to do them proud." I frowned at that as I caught up with Rhonda. If I hadn't known sailings to Adoria were always done in spring and summer, I'd have thought his tone suggested something more immediate. Rhonda downed a cup of punch and went for another. I pulled her away as Clara's mother watched disapprovingly.
"Now, now, Aunt Sally, not until you've had some lunch. Remember what happened at last year's midwinter party."
Fortunately, Rhonda was just as happy to load up on food, and we carried plates of cucumber sandwiches, cold chicken and sliced pears back to the striped blanket. Mira sat on its edge with Pablo, speaking rapidly in Sirminican. Tamsin, radiant with joy, was too excited to eat. Her family shared that happiness, but could hardly turn down such a meal. The teenage siblings, twins, I learned, were named Jonathan and Olivia, and snuggled up on each side of Tamsin, eating and talking at the same time. The littlest girl was introduced to me as Mary, and sat on Tamsin's lap, happily munching on a pear. All of them had the same red hair.
"Look at your hands!" exclaimed Tamsin's mother. "You'll never be able to do a load of clothes again!"
Tamsin beamed. The hands she considered inferior beside mine were smooth and delicate compared to her mother's, which were hard and rough from a lifetime of scalding water and scrubbing.
"I don't intend to," Tamsin replied.
And once I'm married to the richest man in Adoria, you won't have to either. Her father let out a bellowing laugh, one that made everyone else at our blanket smile too. My dreamer, just get yourself over there first. She's not wrong, Jasper said, sidling up to us. I'd noticed him making the rounds to other families too. He crouched down. Tamsin's known around here for her ambition, for her determination to accept no less than perfection. I was just talking to our music teacher the other day, and she couldn't stop raving about Tamsin's remarkable progress on the piano. Her mother turned to her in astonishment. You can play the piano? It was perhaps the most tangible, amazing thing Jasper could have picked. In the circles Tamsin had come from, they never even saw pianos. Playing one was like speaking a foreign language. She flushed with pleasure. I'm still learning, but I can do some basics. If my husband has a piano, I can keep practicing. Jasper winked at her. And if he doesn't, I'm sure you can talk him into one. He turned to me, and I wondered what trivia he'd pull out. I sincerely doubted he'd spoken to our music instructor. I was guessing he'd gotten a crash course on each of our strong areas this morning from Mistress Masterson. In his previous visits, Jasper had simply done cursory checks of us and then talked business with her. The most personal comment I'd ever heard him give a girl was to tell Caroline to reduce the number of breakfast pastries she ate each morning. Adelaide here carries herself with such poise and elegance. It's like she's done this her whole life, he said. I wasn't surprised he'd gone with something external. I was purposely hit or miss with my studies. And with her beauty, we know we'll have men beating down our door over there. Rhonda nodded as she drank from another cup of rum punch, which I had no idea how she'd managed to get a hold of. That's how it's always been with our lovely girl, ever since she was a little one. Boys lining up in the streets, boys at our door, boys in our house. If Adelaide was around, you could be sure there was a boy with her. Uncomfortable silence fell, and I attempted a light laugh that sounded more like I was choking. Jasper mercifully turned toward Mira. Tamsin leaned over Mary and whispered to me, I can see why you've never mentioned her. And Mira. Jasper was still smiling, but it was hard to gauge his true feelings. Well, Mira continues to surprise us all. I'm sure she will in Adoria too. You are Mr. Thorne's father? Asked Pablo. Mr. Cedric Thorne, I thought you might be here. Mira might get a hard time about her accent, but it was nothing compared to his. It took me several moments to pass his words, and I could see Jasper doing the same. He's back in Osfro, finishing up his finals, Jasper frowned. How do you know my son? Pablo hesitated. I met him when he came to get Mirabel. He seems like a good man. I expected some cutting remark from Jasper, but he never broke character. He is, and I'm sure you never would have let Mira go with anyone less. If you'll excuse me now, I must speak with the others. He straightened up and moved on to the next group. I recalled his words to Mistress Masterson about this all being a show to ensure we would go to Adoria with our family's blessings. I couldn't shake the feeling that there was something underhanded going on. Fernanda scoffed when he was gone. We cannot let Mirabel do or not do anything. She makes her own way. I turned back to them and tried to shake off my worries. You knew each other, back in Seminica. While the factions were fighting each other, most ordinary people just wanted to stay out of the way. And when that wasn't possible, people began to flee, explained Mira. She gestured to Pablo and Fernanda. We fell in with the same group of refugees trying to make it to the border. The roads weren't safe. They still probably aren't. Sometimes there was safety in numbers. Sometimes. Even in a group, a lone girl wasn't always safe. I tried to protect others. I tried. Mira's expression darkened, and Fernanda squeezed her hand. Mira did protect others. War brings out the monsters among humanity. And there's only so much anyone can do to... Her eyes fell on the red-haired children, who were hanging on every word. Well, as I said, Mira did plenty of protecting. Rhonda set her empty cup down. You know, I have no problem with Siminikins. I say Osfrid is open to all. Anyone who wants to come and find a new life here is welcome to it. I have great respect for all peoples, and some of my dearest friends are Siminikin, you know. There's a gentleman who runs a crepe shop over by the Overland Fountain. He's my friend. More than a friend, if you catch my meaning. He makes some of the best crepes in the city, and he makes me.
I know the shop you're talking about, said Tamsin's mother, and he's not Siminikin, he's from Lorandy.
He most certainly isn't. I couldn't understand a word he said, and his name ends in an O, just like the rest of you.
Rhonda accompanied that last part with a nod to Mira and her friends. His name's John Devereux, Tamsin's mother insisted. I've washed his laundry. He speaks Lorandian. And crepes are from Lorandy, I added. Rhonda shot me an affronted look.
You doubt me now, too? So much for blood being thicker than water. Oh, well, it doesn't matter. Siminikin, Lorandian, they all sound alike. And really, the two of us didn't do much speaking anyway, if you know what I mean.
I felt guilty when the family picnic ended a couple of hours later, mainly because I was so happy about it. The rest of my housemates were not, and Tamsin in particular took it hard. Everyone was making their goodbyes in the front hall as the carriages prepared to take the visitors back to the city. I saw Tamsin hand a huge bundle of paper to her mother, and I realized it was the culmination of those letters she was always writing. I'd noted she did it daily, but seeing the full sum of them was astonishing. It was her expression that threw me, though. Where it had been so full of open joy earlier, she now looked devastated. I had never seen such emotions on her face, such vulnerability. She gave her parents fierce hugs goodbye, and when she went to lift Mary, Tamsin looked as though she might start crying. I had to avert my eyes. It felt wrong to stare during that kind of moment. Rhonda stood beside me. I'd lost track of how many cups of punch she'd consumed.
Well, she said, putting an arm over my shoulders, I hope you'll spare some time to come visit your old Aunt Sally the next time you're in the capital. I know you'll be a grand lady and all by then, but don't you forget where you came from, girl, you hear me?
Several people near us heard her. The more she drank, the more she had trouble regulating her volume. I couldn't decide if Cedric had done me a favor in hiring her or not. A carriage driver called for the first group of passengers, which included Tamsin's family. She watched them walk out, grief-stricken. As soon as they were gone, she turned on her heels and fled from the foyer. There was so much commotion and buzz from the other guests still waiting for their rides that no one but me noticed her departure. Even Mira was distracted, speaking with one of the workers. Snaking my way through the bystanders, I hurried off to find Tamsin, ignoring Rhonda's shouts that I'd better not forget to come visit her. I found Tamsin in our room, crying on her bed. Her head shot up when I entered, and she furiously wiped at her eyes.
What are you doing here? Shouldn't you be telling your aunt goodbye?
I sat down beside Tamsin. She'll do just fine without me. I came because I was worried about you. She sniffed and wiped her eyes again.
I'm fine.
It's okay to be homesick, I said gently. You don't have to be ashamed about missing them.
I'm not ashamed, but I can't let them, the others, see me like this. I can't show weakness.
Loving your family isn't weakness.
No. But around here, I have to be strong, all the time, always moving forward.
That familiar, determined look gleamed in her eyes again.
I can't let anything stop me from getting what I want, what I need.
I didn't say anything. I just put my hand over hers, and after a moment she squeezed it.
I know everyone thinks I'm cold and unfeeling, that I'm mean to people.
You've never treated me that way? She glanced up.
Well, of course not. How else am I going to learn that damned Belgian waltz if you don't practice with me? I have to keep you on my good side. But seriously.
She pulled away and clasped her hands in front of her.
You have to understand that I'm not doing all this because I'm just inherently a bitch. There's a reason I have to do this. Keep pushing to be the best and get the best in Adoria. If you only knew what I had on the line.
Her voice started to crack. "Then tell me," I pleaded. "Tell me, and maybe I can help you."
"No."
Tamsin brushed away a few more rebellious tears.
"If you knew, you'd never look at me the same.
You're my friend. Nothing's going to change how I feel about you." Yet as I spoke, I wondered if I'd be so quick to believe those words if someone wanted to pry my secrets out of me. I was pretty sure neither Tamsin nor Mira would act the same if they knew they were sharing a room with one of the mighty Rupert's descendants.
"I can't," she said. "I can't risk it."
"Okay. You don't have to tell me anything you don't want to. But I'm always here. You know I am." Her smile was weary but sincere. "I know." The door opened, and Mira rushed in.
"There you are! Everyone's... Are you okay?"
Tamsin got to her feet. "Fine. Fine. What's going on?" Mira glanced at me for confirmation, and I gave her a small nod. She studied Tamsin a few more moments in concern before continuing.
"Everyone's gone. The families. Jasper's calling for all of us to assemble back in the ballroom."
The last of Tamsin's emotional outburst vanished. She gave herself a cursory check in the mirror, and then followed Mira.
"I knew it. I knew something was happening."
We hurried back downstairs and found everyone in the ballroom. Tamsin was by no means the only one suffering from her loved one's departure, and I had to wonder if Jasper's plan would really have the outcome he'd hoped for. Mistress Masterson brought us to attention, as Jasper stepped forward to speak.
"I hope you all enjoyed your day. It was a true delight for me to meet the wonderful people who helped raise you. But their visit isn't the only surprise you're getting today."
He waited, building up the tension in the room. Although his disposition was sunny and reassuring, Mistress Masterson's strained expression told me all wasn't well. My sense of foreboding returned.
"I hope you're all excited about Adoria, because we're going there 2 months earlier than planned."
Chapter 7. No one spoke. Everyone was too stunned. It was Jasper's next proclamation that really elicited a reaction.
"As a result, you will also be taking your exams early. They'll start in 1 week."
Beside me, Tamsin gasped and put a hand to her chest. Other girls, wide-eyed, turned to each other in alarm and began whispering.
"Hush," warned Mistress Masterson. "Mr. Thorne isn't finished speaking." "I know this change in plans is unexpected," Jasper continued. "But really, it's a reflection of your outstanding progress that we feel confident in bringing you to Adoria early. In just a couple of months, you'll be in a whole new world, adored and coveted like the jewels you are. I know my brother will be overcome when he sees this year's class."
Charles Thorne, the Glittering Court's chief financial backer, alternated procurement with Jasper each year. He was an Adoria now, and would sail back to Osfrid in the spring to recruit the next batch of girls, while Jasper oversaw our progress in Adoria.
"I have no doubt you'll all perform excellently in your exams," Jasper continued. "I'd love to stay, but must check in on the other manors as well. Cedric, however, will be coming soon to supervise during your exams and offer moral support."
I cleared my throat and stepped forward.
"Isn't it dangerous?"
Jasper frowned.
"Cedric offering moral support?"
"No, making the crossing in late winter. Isn't that still storm season?"
"I like to think of it more as early spring, and I'd hardly make the journey myself if I thought we'd be in danger. Surely, Adelaide, you haven't gained some sort of nautical knowledge I don't know about, have you? Surpassing mine and that of the ship's captains who agreed to take us?"
It was a ridiculous question to answer, so I didn't. Of course I didn't have any seafaring expertise, but I had read the countless books on Adoria's history that were part of the curriculum here, and there'd been plenty of tales about early settlers learning the hard way that winter crossings weren't advised. We were dismissed to our rooms. And Tamsin, as I expected, had a lot to say. She flounced down on her bed, uncaring of wrinkling her lawn dress.
"Can you believe this? They've moved up our exams, to next week?
Mira also looked uneasy, and I remembered to appear appropriately concerned. We could have taken them today, and it would have made no difference to me.
That's not a lot of time to study, Mira said.
I know, wailed Tamsin. But on our way out, I heard Mistress Masterson say that at this point we either know it or we don't.
She's right, I said, earning astonished looks from both of them.
Come on, you don't think we can all get passing grades in every subject? None of us are going to get cut. A girl would have to fail in multiple subjects to get removed from the Glittering Court's trip to Adoria, and anyone doing that badly would have long since been asked to leave.
I don't want to just get a passing grade, said Tamsin. I want the best grades. I want to be the diamond.
The what? Mira and I asked in unison. I'd heard her talk about excelling many times, but I'd never heard mention of any diamond. Tamsin leaned forward, her brown eyes alight.
It's this year's theme. When they present us in Adoria, they always have some sort of theme. They tailor our wardrobes around it and assign each of us roles, roughly equivalent to our scores. Last year it was flowers, and the top girl was an orchid. The next was a rose, then a lily. I think the year before that it was birds. This year it's jewels.
And the top girl is a diamond, I guessed.
Yes, the top three girls across all manors get invited to the most parties in Adoria, and get special introductions to the most eligible men. I mean, technically we're all exceptional, but Jasper and Charles build up a lot of mystique around those three. It creates demand, and increases the marriage fees, and that increases the surety money that we get to keep for ourselves.
Again, it was of little concern to me. I'd make sure I placed in the middle of the scores just as I always did. Tamsin unquestionably did the best in Blue Spring, and I couldn't believe there was any girl in the other manors who was more motivated. As the exams loomed nearer, the next week became a flurry of activity. Our regular lessons were cancelled, so that we could each devote our time to studying in those areas that needed the most work. The instructors who rotated through all four manors stopped by more frequently, offering tutoring to those who requested it. The manor was in non-stop motion. As for me, I had to contrive areas of study to make myself look busy. Tamsin became withdrawn, isolating herself with books, and I was surprised at how much I missed her frenetic energy. Mira didn't even really need me to drill her in language anymore. She slipped into her accent during casual conversation, but when prompted, her Osfridian was nearly indistinguishable from a native's. In fact, it was better than that of some of the other girls, who'd come in with atrocious lower-class dialects. Sometimes Mira even practiced the accents of other languages for fun. I needed to look like I was doing something, so I spent my time rereading a book on what Mistress Masterson delicately referred to as female studies. Along with the particulars of pregnancy and childbirth, it also included information on what led to those.
A pleasing wife is pleasing in the bedroom. Your warmth and affection will ensure a happy husband, Mistress Masterson had said in our lessons, often in what was perhaps the least warm voice imaginable.
It was pretty much the only area of study that hadn't been part of my previous life. Most of the girls had been mortified when we'd had those lectures, but I couldn't help but regard it with a guilty fascination.
"Isn't that the third time you've read that?"
Mira teased on the day before exams. She was on her bed with language books, while Tamsin, on a rare break, was writing another letter. Flushing, I closed the book.
"I just think it's more puzzling than almost everything else, that's all."
Mira glanced back at her papers. "I don't know. I think it'll just work itself out when the time comes." "I suppose," I said, wondering, not for the first time, if it was an area she already had first-hand experience with. Her cool countenance betrayed nothing.
"There's nothing to know," Tamsin said, not even bothering to look up from her letter, "except that we need to wait until our wedding nights and then let our husbands teach us what they want."
Mira set her book aside and leaned back against the headboard.
"I don't like that. The idea that it's all up to them, that they're in control. Shouldn't we have the right to figure out what we want to?"
This drew Tamsin's attention at last.
"And how would you do that? I knew a girl back home who gave her virtue to a man who promised to marry her, and you know what? He didn't. He was promised to another, and told her it had all been a misunderstanding. It ruined her.
so don't get another crazy idea.
Another? I asked.
She was going on the other day about how she was going to pay her own marriage price, said Tamsin.
I didn't say I was going to, for sure, Mira corrected, just that it was possible.
The contracts don't state we have to get married, just that our fees have to be paid. If you got the money, you could buy yourself out and be free.
You want to go to one of the workhouses? I exclaimed. I remembered that first day with Ada, when Cedric had explained how girls unwilling to fulfill their contracts would be sent off to other, less desirable employment.
No, no, Mira sighed. But I mean if you could find some other way to raise the money while you were meeting suitors in Adoria, you could just pay it off on your own terms. That's all.
How would you raise that kind of money? Asked Tamsin. The minimum price for any of us is 100 gold. Sometimes higher.
I'm just saying it's possible, that's all.
I smiled and returned to my scandalous book. Mira sometimes gave the impression that she could easily take or leave the glittering court. It wasn't surprising she'd come up with such an idea, though Tamsin was right. It would be difficult to implement. When the first exam day came, we were all called down to a meeting in the Great Hall. Our entrance was much different than the initial shuffling of our early days. We descended the grand staircase one by one, moving at a sedate, graceful pace that allowed us to be admired by those gathered below. As I made my way, I spotted Cedric standing with our instructors, making me more self-conscious than I would have normally been. Still, I completed the journey perfectly, and lined up with the other girls, standing in an elegant pose long drilled into us. Mistress Masterson inspected us, and when she'd moved past, I glanced over and saw Cedric watching me. He met my eyes briefly, and then shifted his gaze to Mira. Mistress Masterson issued some instructions about how the day would proceed, and then turned to Cedric.
"Any inspiring words?"
He smiled his showy smile.
"Nothing to say, except good luck. Not that I think any of you'll need it. I've seen you over the last 8 months. You're all exceptional."
Unlike his father, Cedric was telling the truth about keeping tabs on our progress. He'd always chatted with each girl on his visits, genuinely wanting to learn more. As we dispersed for the exams, he caught my sleeve.
"How was your visit with Aunt Sally?"
I rolled my eyes. Honestly, was that the best you could dredge up? I think I would have been better off alone and pathetic.
"Not true. You're too likable for anyone to believe you don't have at least one friend who'd show up to support you. And I didn't have much notice to find someone. I only heard about the schedule change at the last minute."
"Why did it change?"
"Along with you girls, Father transports all sorts of goods for trade to the colonies. If he can get there ahead of the other spring ships, he can turn a better profit. When he finally got a couple of ships willing to make the early crossing, he jumped on it," Cedric explained. "And so I had to find an actress for you."
"Not just any actress. A great star of some of the biggest theatrical productions in Osfro, or so I hear."
Cedric raised an eyebrow at that. "Trust me, I did not find her starring in a big theatrical production. But it was better that people noticed your crazy relative than wondered how you had no one in the world."
"I suppose that's true."
Grudgingly, I added,
"Thank you."
"I'm always at your service. But you'd better go before you're late. I hope you do well."
"I won't. I'll do just good enough."
And I held to that as the exams began. All the information we'd been drilled in over the last 8 months was suddenly condensed into 3 days. Some of the exams were written. Some, like dance, had to be conducted in a more hands-on way. It was exhausting, even for me, particularly as I had to pick and choose which areas to succeed in and which to do poorly in. It was definitely a balancing act, but I was certain I'd place comfortably in the middle. I'd make good on my promise to Cedric to attract no unnecessary attention.
"Adelaide, dear," Miss Hayworth said halfway into my dance exam, "what are you doing?"
"The waltz," I offered.
She shook her head, making a few notes in her papers. "I don't understand. You executed this perfectly last week and completely botched the new rigadon. Today it's reversed."
I tried to keep my face blank.
"Nerves will do that to you, ma'am."
"Continue," she said,
waving us on and wearing the exasperated look I often brought out in her. Nearby, I saw Clara smirk at my critique. In her time here, she'd come to excel in this area, so much so that Miss Hayworth had suggested she lead the opening dances in Adoria. She needed these scores to offset the abysmal ones she had in academic areas, and really, I didn't care what she thought anyway. Tamsin's thoughts, however, were something I deeply cared about. Farther across the room, I saw her watching me with a puzzled look. She soon slipped back into the rhythm of the dance, but I could have kicked myself for my error. Alternately excelling and failing was easy enough to do around here. Keeping track of which areas I was allegedly deficient in was more difficult. This wasn't the first time I'd mixed something up, and this wasn't the first time Tamsin had noticed. Written tests followed dance, something that made me much more comfortable. No one but the instructors knew if I mixed something up. But another slip followed on the second day during our music exam. While we weren't expected to be experts on any one instrument, we were supposed to have a passing knowledge of each one. Rather than quiz us on all of them for our final, our instructors simply selected three and based our score on that. I hadn't anticipated that. The first two, the flute and harp, were ones I'd always purposely performed poorly on. I assumed the last instrument she'd produce would be a harpsichord or lute, which I always showed my true proficiency on. Instead, she chose the violin. It wasn't played much by women in Adoria, so I'd always regarded it as a safe choice to botch here. Now I realized to pull a decent music score I needed to excel in something. And so, to the amazement of her and my peers, I produced a perfectly executed melody on the violin.
"Well, look at that," Mistress Bosworth said, beaming. "You've been practicing."
"You have not been practicing," whispered Tamsin later, once the exam was over and we were on break to go to dinner. "Where did you learn to do that?" I shrugged.
"From her.
The last time she brought out the violin, you couldn't even hold the bow straight." "Tamsin, I don't know. Sometimes I get anxious and mess things up."
"What's it matter? You've been doing great."
As hoped, that distracted her.
"I have," she said proudly. "I answered all of those religious and political essays for Mr. Bricker perfectly. And I know I got almost everything on the Adorian culture and society test right, too. That's one of the most important, you know."
I smiled, genuinely happy for her.
"You'll get your diamond rank in no time."
"If I can beat out the girls in the other manners. I know I'm the best here." She said it as a fact, not even bragging. "But who knows about the other three houses?" I wasn't worried for her, particularly as the rest of the exam days went by. That zeal and intense resolve I'd seen since the first day were fully turned on, and she threw herself into each exam. When she returned to our room each night, she'd fight her exhaustion and study more. After the tests ended on the third and final day, we were all worn out, even those who hadn't studied as much as Tamsin had. Everyone was weary and drawn, and I gratefully went to bed as soon as we were excused from dinner. Neither my roommates nor I said much of anything, choosing instead to drop into sleep with a sigh of relief. The next morning was a different matter. Rested and free of exams, we were hit by the truth. We had done it. We'd completed what we set out to do and we'd joined the glittering court. We didn't have our results yet, but the triumph of our accomplishment was heady. Mistress Masterson gave us the whole day off, with plans for our first big celebration that night in honor of Vale's Day, greatest of the winter holidays. We'd all been assigned specific tasks to ready for the party, and none of us minded applying our hard-won abilities. "I love Vale's Day," Tamsin said as we put on our day dresses. "The food, the smells, the decorations. Seems a shame we're doing it all so last minute." She was right. Usually winter festivities started weeks ahead of the Angel of Wisdom's holy day, allowing the cheerful atmosphere to last most of the month. Well, if Jasper hadn't moved up our timeline, our celebrations wouldn't have gotten shoved aside for his profit, I reminded her. "At least we get some sort of celebration. You know those poor heretics of Euros, the barefoot priests? They don't celebrate at all. Say it's idolatry. But maybe nothing at all is better than what the Alansans do. Who'd want to be out there worshipping trees in this weather?"
"Among the trees," corrected Mira. "Vale's Day is midwinter for them, the longest night of the year. The Alansans pray outside to Dianziel for insight, and then will give thanks tomorrow to Alansiel for a return of the sun, and the day's getting longer."
I regarded her with some surprise. It wasn't often she pulled out a fact I didn't know, but then she'd also probably met real Alonzans. Like so many areas, her religious beliefs were something I never inquired about. She attended Orthodox services to Euros with us, which